It's 6:30 p.m. You're tuned to Resonance FM, London's arts and community radio station. My name's Jack Thurston, and this is The Bike Show.
In 1965, this was the sound.
Simpson, I can see now down the road, way, way down the road, I can see them coming up. A tremendous effort between the two. They're side by side. Simpson in the blue jersey with the red sleeves for England, and Altig is on his wheel. Altig is on his wheel. They're on the near side of the road, and they're going for the line like mad. And Simpson, I think, is going to do it. Simpson is away. He's clear. Simpson has won. Simpson has won the World Championship. The first time ever by a Great Britain rider.
Well, Geraint Thomas is there. He's looking back to see if he can find Mark Cavendish. He's dropping back a little bit. He's got a few seconds to sort this out, but not more than 20 seconds.
You're right. So Cavendish now, we're going to focus on him and see whether he can actually get through. It's all about timing your effort. Australia at the front are beginning to lead this one out. Here we go, the full commitment. It's also all about timing your effort to perfection here. There's Geraint Thomas on the far left. He nearly collided with the barriers. Australia now really beginning to flex their muscles at the front. Saw a shot of Geraint Thomas as well, and also Mark Cavendish. Can Cavendish find a way through? He looks as though he's hemmed in at the moment, but remember, he has the explosive finishing power. The line's getting nearer and nearer. Where's the Manx Express? Can he come through? Here he comes, the Manx Express. Mark Cavendish on the left of our screen. He's going to be the world champion. Look for the salute. He's the world champion. Mark Cavendish has won the world title for Great Britain, and we've waited since 1965 when Tommy Simpson won in San Sebastian.
Well, welcome to a new season of The Bike Show, and wasn't it exciting to see Mark Cavendish add the World Championship road title to his green jersey and five stage wins in this year's Tour de France? Britain has a genuine cycling superstar, and unlike many top-rate British athletes, it seems to be that he's addicted to winning, so long may it continue. This is the first show of the new season, and it's good to be back. I hope you'll forgive me for being away for a few weeks, but I was doing something rather momentous. That's right, I was away, tying the knot, getting hitched, jumping the broomstick. And yes, I did manage to find a role for the bicycle. Over the summer, I'd acquired a rather lovely bright red touring tandem in Reynolds 531 Steel, hand-built in Stockport by the late Frank Herity, and on the day of our marriage, I rode the thing solo down to the register office, and after the ceremony, my beautiful stoker, or should I say bride, and I rode home for a little celebration. We, of course, beat everyone else who was at the ceremony by at least 10 minutes, showing that for short journeys, it's almost always faster by bicycle. We also raised a few smiles on the streets of Abergavenny as well. So that's my news. Also news to The Bike Show is here in the studio, Jen Kerrison, a new recruit to The Bike Show fold. Astute listeners may recognise Jen and her Antipodean twang from her work on Out in South London, which goes to air this time on a Tuesday evening on Resonance FM. But this is your first time on The Bike Show, Jen. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's lovely to be here, and congratulations on the win yesterday.
Yeah.
I know it wasn't yours personally, but still, it's a very exciting day, wasn't it?
It was, and hard luck for your man who came second.
You know, I meant to be more disappointed than I am, but having lived in the UK for a number of years now, I was really secretly hoping it would be Cav. So I'm just as pleased as everyone else, I think.
Very exciting finish. Yeah. That's the spirit. Well, you're going to be reporting on the Bicycle Film Festival over the next couple of weeks.
Indeed, I am. Yep.
We're going to be giving away some tickets for that in a moment. But before we do, tell me some of the screenings at this year's film festival that you're most looking forward to seeing.
Well, Jack and listeners, as you know, we should know, the Bike Film Festival kicks off on the 5th or the 6th of October, I think it is. So there's an opening night party at the Oakley Shop in Covent Garden, which I'm sure is going to be a massive event. And then we have a couple of days of loads and loads of bicycle films all screened at the Barbican Centre, which is an amazing cinema there. The only thing is they don't sell popcorn, so I was getting quite looking forward to sitting down watching lots of bike films and scoffing on popcorn, having ridden a long journey there. But I just remembered tonight the Barbican don't sell popcorn, which is a bit of a shame.
Why not?
I don't know. I was there watching a film just last week and I asked them the same question. They couldn't give me a good enough answer. So I think, although I'm probably not meant to say this, it might be worth trying to smuggle your own popcorn in if you've had a long ride down to the cinema. But yeah, lots and lots of films for the festival this year. And loads of short films, which I'm a big fan of the short film because I think it gets an opportunity for professional and amateur filmmakers to really showcase everything that they love about whatever their chosen topic is. And luckily for us, this festival is all about the bike.
It's kind of difficult sometimes to make a really good full-length feature with a bicycle as a main protagonist. So sometimes the short films work a bit better than, I mean, there's the classics like Breaking Away and A Sunday in Hell, but you can't show those again and again and again.
Absolutely.
It takes a while for another good one to come around. So I think the short films, particularly the urban bike shorts, are kind of the backbone of the Bicycle Film Festival.
Absolutely. And I think the great thing about short films also for bike films is that cyclists can go out and make them, you know, and nobody knows bikes and nobody knows cycling like us bike riders. So I think, you know, with a flip phone or with an SLR camera, you can go out now and just create your own little masterpiece. And if you're lucky, get it filmed at the festival. So there are a number of great films that are on. We've got about, the festival's got about three or four screenings each day, so there's loads to choose from. The one that I'm looking forward to the most is actually a feature-length film. It's being screened on Sunday the 9th of October and it's called The Wheels of Chance. It's a silent film and it's being run in conjunction with the Barbican Silent Film Club. So they have screenings, I think, once a month of silent films, and they're doing a cycling one this month. And it was actually filmed in 1922, this film, so it's an oldie, and I think it's a 74-minute feature, so a short feature, but a feature nonetheless.
And so it's a film version of the H.G. Wells novel of the same name, I'm assuming.
Ooh, I have to confess my ignorance. I don't know the
Wheels of Chance. Yes.
Tell me about the novel, and I'll tell you if it's the same.
Well, it's about a chap called Hoopdriver,
right,
who's a kind of sort of slightly sad suburban clerk figure for whom the bicycle is a means of escape and adventure. I won't tell any more than that.
Well, it sounds like the one, actually. And is it a love story?
Yeah.
It is a love story about him falling for a woman cyclist? Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, that is the one, actually. I didn't realise it was a book as well. The great thing about this screening is that while it's a silent film, what's really coming back in silent films at the moment is live accompaniment by pianists or bands. So this is actually going to have a live accompaniment by a pianist on the night. So I think to be able to sit there and be like you're actually at the cinemas in the 1920s watching a film that explores, you know, the Edwardian liberation of society through bicycles will be an
brilliant
epic event.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds like a real coup for the
really
Bicycle
fun.
Film Festival.
Absolutely.
So as well as the screenings, there's other stuff that goes on or in the fringes of the festival, isn't there? Do you want to tell us about that?
There is loads of other stuff that goes on. In the fringes might be a little bit of an understatement, actually, because there's actually loads happening. There's parties every night of the festival other than the Thursday. So if you can party into the wee hours and still get up and go for your long ride on the Saturday, then I'll tell you about these. But if not, shut your ears because you might not want to hear about these. There's the opening party, as I said, at Oakley in Covent Garden on Wednesday the 5th. At Barbican Lates on Thursday the 6th, there's a night called Bikes Rock, which is going to have a bunch of vendors there selling their wares, as well as a Rollerpalooza roller racing competition. So you can get down there and jump on and test your might against others who are willing to do the same. The Saturday night party is yet to be confirmed, but the Sunday night party is at Look Mum No Hands. So it's going to be quite a unique event in itself, because it's actually, well, the guys down at Look Mum No Hands are claiming that this is the first ever bike-themed pub quiz party night. So that kicks off at 8 p.m. I think the quiz starts at 9 p.m. So, you know, if you fancy yourself as a bit of a trivia master with the bikes, all things bikes, then you can get down to Look Mum No Hands.
Cool. Well, we've got a couple of tickets for a screening of a film called Sun Chasers on Saturday the 8th of October to give away. And that's a 2 p.m. matinee screening. So you can get your morning ride in on the Saturday and then just pitch up to watch a film. Briefly, Jen, what's Sun Chasers about, so people know we've got to rush on?
Briefly, Sun Chasers is a short feature film that explores, I guess in a nutshell, it explores disability and liberation of people living with disabilities through competitive cycling. So it explores and follows the lives of three women who are training for the 2008 Beijing Paralympics. It looks like an epic film, and and it looks like it really, really seeks to explore in many different ways the lives of these women as they're training for the Paralympics.
Fantastic. So, well, yeah. To win this pair of tickets, you will need to answer a question, and the question is as follows. When the Bicycle Film Festival first came to London, the screenings weren't at the Barbican. I want to know both the year and the screening venue where the films were screened. So that's the first year that the Bicycle Film Festival came to London, and where were the films shown? Answers by email to bikeshow@resonancefm.com or on the Twitter @thebikeshow. And I think we're going to do this as like a first answer wins, aren't we?
So I guess
out of the hat.
Is it when the tweet arrives or when the email arrives?
Well, whichever. We'll figure out who's the first. So email bikeshow@resonancefm or Twitter @thebikeshow. We'll be returning to the film festival next week with a proper preview and hopefully some interviews from Jen. Thanks, Jen.
No problem.
So now for the rest of the show, we're going to go time travelling. And a few months ago, a listener by the name of John France dropped me an email suggesting I go down to visit a new bike shop that had opened in Upper Norwood. That's by Crystal Palace. I say a new bike shop, but in fact it was a very old bike shop called Central Cycle and Auto Stores. It's reopened as Blue Door Bicycles, and its new owner is David Hibbs. I went down south to meet David and to get the story.
Where we're standing at the moment is just in front of a counter, which I think probably dates back to sort of the 1930s or 1940s. We've certainly got pictures from the 1950s of the previous owner, a Miss Talbot, who ran it with her brother and previously with her father, standing behind the counter where my daughter's currently sitting or standing. And she had a very similar setup with the counter and the tubes behind her in the old days, with batteries and things as well.
What was the name of the shop?
It was called Central Auto and Cycles. And before that, I'm not quite sure what it was called, because it was actually a bike shop since the 1920s. I think a Mr. Munyon, don't ask me to pronounce it properly, ran it until 1949, which is when the Talbots took over. But before that, it was actually a dairy. And on the wall behind us, there are some ceramic tiles which date back to the time that the place was a dairy. They're green and they've got little trees on them, but in fact those tiles, which probably I think are from the sort of late 19th century, aren't dating back to the origin of the shop, because they're on the front of what was a cottage. And the cottage, if you come into the shop, you have to go up some steps to get into the middle part of the shop. It goes up because there's actually a basement underneath there, and it's a cottage with a flat above it, but originally would have been two cottages which were, I think, maybe associated with an earlier dairy. But in fact they built a parade of shops on the front, and if we look over behind the counter you can see some archways which I'm told are very typical of the mid-19th century in Crystal Palace, because when the palace was built, it had lots of arches within the palace itself, and it was a local fashion to put arches into the architecture of the buildings. So we've got arches behind the counter and arches behind the wall that's now covered up on the other side of the shop, but the tiles go over the top of the arches. So the arches must have predated the tiling. So probably the cottage goes back to before the construction of the palace, which was in the 1850s. Not sure how far before, but certainly sort of first half of the 19th century. Where we're standing now, with the traffic behind us, which is sometimes a bit of a nuisance for noise levels, where we're standing now is in fact the heart of the shop, as it was from about 1949 to the end of 2010.
So this would have been one of those shops where you'd have walked in and there'd have been someone perhaps a little bit surly behind the counter, and you'd have asked for something that you weren't quite sure what it was, and they would have said, well, what are you asking for? And then they would have gone rummaging around in the back and brought you back something that probably wasn't quite right, and you'd have had one of those, you know, typical British shopkeeping to and fro's until you got what it was that you needed.
Well, I think the answer to that is yes and no. It was typical in that you had to ask the person at the counter, but everything that I know about the Talbots, and I came in here a few times when they ran it, but I've met a lot of their customers since, was they definitely were not surly, and they actually knew what they were doing. Jeff was a really good engineer. You'll see some bits that he made later. Margaret also knew her stuff, and towards the end, because they were well into the late 70s, and I think Margaret must have been 80 when she stopped serving behind the counter, they were notably not as swift as the service in McDonald's, but I think they were never other than polite.
So they would have seen their shop through the post-war bike boom of the early 50s, when people came back from the war and club cycling was at its height and there was petrol rationing, so everyone was getting around on a bicycle. The sort of second or maybe the third bike boom in British history.
Yeah, they were certainly a big part of that locally. There were a number of bike shops in the palace at that time. If you have a look at our website, the Blue Door Bicycles website, or the associated centralcycle.co.uk, you can see pictures of Margaret and Jeff riding back in the 50s. You find far more of Margaret, because I think that Jeff was the photographer in the family. I believe that they carried on riding quite late in life, although towards the end neither of them were terribly fit, and I think that they were most normally seen out in an old Austin Cambridge, which used to tootle around the neighbourhood until the end of 2010.
And how did the shop come into your hands?
Well, I'd been keen to set up a bike shop for a while. I took redundancy from the Department for Transport at the end of 2010, and I'd actually got my eye on a shop down on the Dulwich Estate. Unfortunately, the Dulwich Estate didn't particularly want us to take over a unit, which is still empty, but there you go. I'd put a note under the door of the shop saying to the old couple, would you like somebody to come and help or take over the stock or whatever. Didn't get a response, unfortunately, and I know other people were interested, but towards the beginning of this year, unfortunately, Jeff had died at the end of 2010. Margaret went into a home, and the landlord put a notice on the door basically taking possession of the property. I contacted the landlord. That was probably in February. Within a couple of weeks, we were in clearing the site, and when I say clearing the site, I mean clearing it. We have taken in excess of 30 tons of materials off this site, some of which was demolition related, because we had to take off the roof, which was completely shot, and we had to take down some other stuff that was falling down, but a lot of it was just stuff.
So had the shop been closed by Jeff and Margaret, or was it almost left like the kind of Marie Celeste, due to their age and personal circumstances of Jeff dying and Margaret not being able to look after herself independently, just walked away from it. And as you said, it was not owned by them, but owned by a landlord. Did you find it intact, as it were?
It was completely intact. In fact, it was more than intact. It was intact with layers of history, layers several feet deep in places. Jeff had obviously intended to carry on running the business. He'd got some new bikes in at the end of 2010, and we'd been selling those bikes, plus a lot more. But the place was in a bit of a state. Where we're standing at the moment, if you look above your head, you'll see a nice new ceiling. That had to be replaced because the roof leaked. At the back of the building, we're still working on the roofs there, but they leaked. But it was actually trading intermittently right until the time that Jeff died. People come in and say, oh, I've been here several years, but I never saw it open. Well, that's probably true, because he only opened from 10 o'clock in the morning till whenever, and only occasionally, because he was 79. So it was a functioning bike shop until the end of the year last year.
So did you feel you had a strong responsibility to keep things as they were, or at least to show off the history?
When you're lucky enough to get a property like this, this has got such a lot of history. I just wanted to honour what had gone before, build on what had gone before. And everybody that has been here and talked to me about Jeff and Margaret has said nice things about them. So it's a case of, well, they haven't got any children. Much of their life was involved with this shop. They did have other things in their lives. They had a caravan. They had had cycling back in the 50s. They had some friends, but no children to remember them. And it would be nice if people could come in here and say, well, this is a nice shop. It's building on what came before. People come in and say, gosh, it's so much brighter and bigger than when they were here before. But everybody speaks well of them. And I just want to honour that history. We're now out in the yard area at the rear of the cycle shop. This was where Jeff used to do his maintenance work. When we moved, where we're standing at the moment was about 10 foot deep in stuff. That's about the only way to describe it. It was just junk, some of which had been quite good at one time, but unfortunately the roof leaked like a sieve, so it just destroyed most of the stuff that was out here. There are some bits and pieces, some nice old cranks over here that we rescued, but a lot of it unfortunately had to go for recycling because it was just so rotten.
Well, we've talked a lot about the wonderful history of the shop, but tell me about what you hope for its future. What's this shop going to be about?
That's very much up to the community as to what they want. I have not got a background in the cycle trade. I am a cyclist. More of your utility and touring cyclist than clad in Lycra. I think that with my waistline, Lycra is not a good idea. So when we opened, we were thinking in terms of some of the more classic style bicycles, the Pashleys and some of the Dawes heritage ones, and hybrids. But we've been interested to see what people actually like around here. We've certainly got a lot of interest now in road bikes. So we've got a VO2 high-end road bike, and we're getting other road bikes in. And we've also had a lot of interest in children's bikes, and some interest too in electric assist bikes. Now, some cyclists are a bit snooty about electric assist and say, well, it's not proper cycling. But the way I look at it, if you live at the top of a whopping great hill like we do, and the option is either you jump in your car or you have an electric assist bike, go for the electric assist bike. You still get the exercise. You still avoid the congestion and the noise that are created by cars. Just go for it. We're also starting to stock in more things as people ask for them. We've got quite a range of clothes here already, but we've also been buying in nutrition again for the faster riders, because Dulwich Paragran come up here quite often, and I guess as the biggest hill in South London, allegedly the biggest hill in London, but it depends which website you look at, people want the challenge of Gypsy Hill or Central Hill, and when they've got to the top they probably need a recharge, so gels and things, we keep those in. Plus ordinary stuff like tubes. We've got some nice Hope Hubs, Caradice, because I like Caradice. All kinds of bits and pieces to support what local cyclists want. which is a huge range from people who really haven't got a huge amount of money to spend on their bikes to other people who it's a passion for them and are willing and able to pay for top dollar proper stuff.
So you've not got a background in the bike trade, so you're learning it as you go along.
I fear so. So our customers, we have got properly trained mechanics, and I have been to mechanic school as well, so it's not like we're experimenting on their bikes, but just knowing how you get hold of particular parts, which wholesaler, how long does it take you to get an account with them, this sort of thing, you have to learn as you go. Now we've climbed up that learning curve, and we ask the forgiveness of those whose repairs were a bit delayed at the beginning, but we're now fully up and functioning, still learning. I spent some time at a bike shop down in Hampshire just getting a bit of work experience with them, and they'd been in the trade for many years and they still were learning stuff as they went.
What are your biggest insights in the short time that you've been running the shop?
Well, if you're lucky, you start off with lots of locals who liked the previous owner, so that's a good thing. I think being open as long as possible for the commuters and people who are working late, particularly in South London, because people working up in town, they don't get home till 6 or 7 in the evening. I think that's quite a good thing. What will make us a success? I think being nice to people and getting it right when we do the repairs, and being honest to people. Unfortunately, one or two people come in with bicycles which are they didn't start off as expensive bikes. They've been kept in a garden for a year or two, and just making sure that they understand that you cannot make the proverbial silk purse out of what was truly not a brilliant bike to start with, I think is quite a good thing to do as well.
What are the aspects of running a small local bike shop like this that bring in the money? Is it selling bikes? Is it selling parts and inner tubes, or is it the repairs?
Well, at the moment, our workshop is extremely busy, so that's what's keeping us going at the moment. We've got a waiting list in the workshop, which you'd hope to have at this time of the year. We are selling bikes, which is good, and we're selling parts, but we're also selling clothes. We've gone for quite a nice upmarket range called Cycladelic, which people may have heard of, which is a ladies' wear. And we're starting to sell
made
that.
In Hackney.
Made in Hackney, yeah, made in London. We try to source as much of our stuff from the UK as we can. I know that's a bit odd from some people's perspectives, but things like Brooks and Caradice and Pashley and Hope are British, and Dawes is at least a British brand, even if it's made abroad these days. So we try and do that. The Cycladelic, it is a bit upmarket. We're not sure how popular it will be in this area. We've got people who are keen on their clothing, and that's good. But we also do the Altura, which is good quality, but fairly economical, let's say.
I was talking there with David Hibbs of Blue Door Bicycles. The shop has its own website, and he's also got a website documenting the history of the old Central cycles. And that's definitely worth a look if you're interested in South London cycling history. That's it for the bike show this week. See you on the ride of the falling leaves this coming Sunday, or tune in again this time next week. It's good to be back. Next up is One Life Left here on Resonance FM.